talking history. This is News Talk.
We shall fight on the beaches, we shall fight in the hills, we shall never surrender.
And out of that silence came thousands of voices.
The strategy of the white man has always been divide and conquer.
As one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Auch die Rollen, Argus, Akhoisa.
Good evening and welcome. We're talking history on News Talk 106 to 108 with me, Patrick Gagan. In tonight's show, we're looking at the history of the Leaving Cert, introduced 100 years ago this year. And we'll be finding out how it has evolved and debating its impact on Irish education. You can email us your thoughts and views, talkinghistory@newstalk.com, and we'd love to hear from you. As I say, tonight's show is on the history of the Leaving Cert. Introduced in 1924, the Leaving Cert is the final set of examinations in the Irish secondary school system. Every year, there is always huge interest in the examination, what comes up in the papers, how they are graded, and everything that goes with it. Since 1976, entry to the majority of third-level courses is decided by the point system based on Leaving Cert results and administered separately by the CAO, the Central Applications Office. And so, in tonight's show, we want to look at the introduction of the Leaving Cert and debate how it has evolved over the past 100 years. And to help me do this, I'm delighted to welcome our panel of experts. Dr. Orla McCormick is Associate Professor in the School of Education at the University of Limerick and is an expert on curriculum policy and reform. Deirdre McMahona is past President and now Public Relations Officer for the History Teachers Association of Ireland and is a lecturer in history pedagogy in the School of Education at Trinity College Dublin. Dr. Hazel Murray is a lecturer in cybersecurity at Munster Technological University and has analysed old Leaving Cert papers to see how they have evolved. Dr. Colm McGyarlt is a postdoctoral researcher on the Cartlan project on the Cunra na Gaeilge archive at the University of Galway, and he's an expert on how history has been taught in the Irish school curriculum. Well, you are all very welcome. And Orla, I might begin with you, and I might begin with a question in the present day and about how the Leaving Cert is such an obsession. It's such a cultural phenomenon in this country. We're obsessed and the media is obsessed about what comes up on the exam paper, what the weather is like this month, and everything that goes with it. And you don't really see that going on in other countries.
No, you don't. You're right, Patrick. And I mean, Ireland is quite unusual. I think actually there's only two other places that there's the level of obsession that we have. And I think that's Egypt and New York State. So I think it is quite unusual, but for us, it probably becomes the norm. We expect every late May and June that the newspapers are going to start focusing on this. I think a big part of it is because it is so high stakes. Everything depends on the Leaving Certificate, the grades and the points that come from that. So it is so important to the students that I think we put so much energy into it in the media.
And you mentioned the points there, and the points is separate and it's administered by the CAO and it's run by the universities. It could be changed. It hasn't been changed. But in a way, we almost blame the Leaving Cert for whatever problems we have with the point system.
Totally. And they have become one and the same thing. I mean, we're here today talking because the Leaving Certificate is 100 years. The CAO points are only 50 years. So they did, the Leaving Cert existed without it for a long time. But the reality is they have become one and the same thing. And Áine Hyland did a work a couple of years ago, and she showed that, you know, if you say to a student, how did you get on in your Leaving Certificate? They'll come back to you and tell you how many points they got. So the two of them are viewed as interlinked, but you're completely correct. We can change the CAO. We can look at an alternative way and detach them.
And you've done some work on the media coverage. Do you think the media is in part to blame for all of this, that we add to the stress levels that students are facing because we give it so much attention? It's on the radio, it's in the newspapers, it's on the television, that the media is as obsessed as everyone else, and that can't be healthy.
Totally. And I think the media, there's like a symbiotic relationship, probably, that the media reflects society and societal views, but it also informs it. So it also tells us what is important and what we should be focusing on. And I did a study with Jim Gleason and Tom O'Donoghue, where we have two papers, but one of them, we analyzed newspaper articles. So I think across maybe a 4-year period, we analysed just under 800 newspaper articles across two broadsheets. So I suppose that's showing you the level of attention that it's given. And I suppose it shortly, in brief, what we found actually was that there was an assumption that students were going to go to college. There was an assumption that they were going to do a level 8 degree. There was indicative silences in other pathways. And I think it does feed into this view that success within the Leaving Certificate is perceived as continuing on to a level 8 degree.
I always think that if you're a tourist visiting Ireland in the month of June, you must be very intrigued and surprised and amused to open the national newspaper and to see so much coverage of what was the question on W.B. Yeats like, or, you know, did the Nazis come up in the form we were expecting, or, you know, what was the question on Shakespeare this year, and such in-depth interest in what the questions were like.
Totally. And I think there was a study done by Queen's University on looking at predictability within the Leaving Certificate. And they found that actually the media plays into this narrative around us wanting predictability. And if a question comes up that's surprising and unexpected, then it's actually presented really negatively within the media. So it does feed into our attitude that we should know what's coming up. There shouldn't be any surprises within that.
But Colm, as we know, the Leaving Cert is about a lot more than just going to college, and there are very many different career paths. And I think also worth saying that the Leaving Cert is a very robust examination. It's internationally respected. It is a significant qualification. But maybe, Colm, let's go back in time. Let's go back in time to the 19th century before Ireland was an independent state. And what happened there, and what were the changes that were introduced that kind of led us on this path towards the creation of this exam?
I think one of the things that we need to remember, that this obsession that you've been talking about for the last few minutes, in my view, that stems from the origin of, I suppose, intermediate education, as it was called at the time. You have the introduction of second level education in Ireland from 1878 with the Intermediate Education Act. But connected with this, there was a system of exam called the payment by results system. And what that was effectively, I suppose, teachers' pay was directly linked to the amount of students in their class who could pass the exam. Not how well they did, just get a basic pass. But what it did was it instilled from the very start of the system this focus that the exam should be what is central to the overall course. I find it very interesting. We've been talking about, say, the Leaving Cert as a topic, whereas it's not called that anymore. It's the senior cycle in schools right now. So there we still have that connection, even in our minds, between the exam and what's supposed to be the course. Now, I suppose I've gone back to 1878 when the system was founded. The Leaving Cert becomes a thing officially in 1924. You have the Intermediate Education Amendment Act, 1924, connected with the Ministers and Secretaries Act, which established the Department of Education and this new system of second level education. So they moved from the previous three-tiered system to what we kind of know today. At the time, they called it the intermediate, or I suppose, you know, kind of the junior cert, leaving cert divide, but it was the inter cert from the 20s. There was an attempt to change the system before independence. It was called the McPherson Bill. Now, this was the reason I mentioned today, because it's just, I find it very interesting, that kind of connection between education and nationalism and statehood. This bill was completely rejected by the school system in Ireland. The Catholic Church called it a brazen-faced attempt of a hostile government to impose on the mind and soul of an intensely Catholic people the deadly grip of foreign fetters. The system that arrived in 1924 was almost identical to the system that they rejected in 1919.
So what was the problem with it in 1919? Is it that it was being imposed by the British? Is it the fact that it just wasn't their own thing and they feared some kind of corrupting influence? Or was there some educational issue they had with it?
It was mostly because it was the British who... this was the last attempt to have a, I suppose, to impose a system of education for the whole island as one. But there was this kind of belief that, right, independence is going to come soon, so we might as well just wait it out until we have our own system and then see if we devise it. Didn't really quite happen. But
and Colm, are we right in having the show this year in 2024, or should we have waited 2 years to 2026? Because that's when the first set of students sit the examination. It's introduced 100 years ago in 1924, but it has the first cohort going through that 2 year cycle 2 years later. So when's the correct anniversary?
Again, that goes back to the point of what do you understand the Leaving Cert to be? Is it an exam that, I suppose, evaluates the learning of the students, or is it the overall system? We get talks about this, like in the 1920s as well. You have the Irish or the Schoolmasters Association were coming out with statements. I have one here. They said that examinations had been instituted to be the servant of education, but they became its master.
Oh, brilliant! Yeah,
and so that's this idea then that, you know, what is supposed to be a tool ends up becoming the dominant, I suppose, way of viewing the whole system. So I think that 1924 is a fitting time to start our 100 years.
Because this is the centenary of the start of that senior cycle, which led to the exam. And yes, and that we shouldn't be just dominated by that end product exam and fall into that trap, which I think is an excellent point, which is why we are right in doing it this year and not waiting for two more years. And Deirdre, it is fascinating there, that idea of state building and state formation, that once the Irish state was independent, it realised how important education was going to be in telling its story and in promoting this new independent state.
Absolutely. I mean, if you go back, in fact, to, again, pre-independence, but to the democratic programme of the First Dáil, for instance, in 1919, one of the things that they set out in terms of what the nature and character of the sort of new republic of which they're championing would be, quote, that they shall be provided, that children will be provided with the means and facilities requisite for proper education and training as citizens of a free and Gaelic Ireland. And I think that word Gaelic is very important, because when you look at the nature of, you know, what was to be the content of the new educational system then in the Irish Free State. Again, another quote was literally to kind of sing of past glories, to tell Ireland's story, and that the central, if you like, emphasis would be in promoting a Gaelic Ireland, that this would, you know, of who we are and who we've come from. And I suppose in one sense you can understand why they did this, because, you know, under the previous system, there was no Irish history taught. So I think it was important, obviously, to, as I say, to sing of past glories, as they put it. But not only that, they were promoting the Irish language, very, very centrally. In fact, the first minister appointed in the new Dáil was in fact a past president of the Gaelic League, Sean O'Callaghan, and he was appointed Minister for the Irish Language before an actual Minister of Education came into force eventually in 1924. So, you know, it's very interesting looking at kind of the history of the department, of in a sense what they set out to do as educationalists. So teachers in a sense became propagandists and agents of the state, because what they were basically tasked to do was to develop in their pupils, you know, the cultural traits of the Irish. So schools were tasked with instilling this sense of nationality in their pupils, rooted in the richness of the Gaelic tradition. So the history of teaching history within the new curriculum, but the overall, I suppose, impulse was, as I say, championing Gaelicisation of Irish society.
And Deirdre, of course, this is also the centenary of the setting up of the Department of Education, and we had ministers for education. I'm just wondering, who is driving the Leaving Cert in this new, I suppose, senior cycle in those early years? Is it the ministers themselves? Is it the civil servants? Is it the Catholic Church outside? You know, who is and who are the driving forces?
Well, in a sense, it's all of the above, but not in equal measure. And the fact there that you you introduced, and it's very important to include the role of the Catholic Church in all of this. That while there is very much a sense of, you know, forming policy and educational policy on future, you know, Irish citizens, the department, the civil service, and the ministers are quite happy, in a sense, to take a step back and basically allow the church to continue the running, the management, even up to the selection of textbooks, etc. All of this to the church-run schools and the boards of individual church. So while there's an overall general very proud policy of this new Department of Education in the Free State, there's also a sort of a distance. And in fact, Donald Buachla wrote a great history of Irish education in Ireland. And one of the phrases, in fact, a number of phrases that's used in the preface are quite damning. The introduction is by the great Patrick Lynch. And he talks about the feebleness of the ministers and just basically the lack of real initiative on their part to take in hand, you know, any kind of serious, you know, nitty gritty, if you like, details on what the actual curriculum would be. So it's a strange kind of it's a strange relationship, but one, as we know, which lasted for decades.
Hazel, you've done some brilliant work on how STEM subjects, science and maths and so on, have been taught over the past 100 years, and the types of students who have taken the exams and everything connected there. And when you look at it from the perspective of gender, it is remarkable to look at what things were like 100 years ago in terms of the numbers of boys, the numbers of girls who were taking a subject like Leaving Cert Maths.
So back in 1926, just for context, only about 400 boys would have taken the Leaving Cert and 120 girls. And actually, one thing we found when we looked through old exam papers, so we collected 100 years of exam papers. There was no centralized archive for that. So we went into libraries across the country. We put out campaigns on social media to see if anyone had papers stored in their attics. And we've got an archive of all the last 100 years of STEM exam papers. And one thing we found is that between 1930 and 1968, there was actually a maths exam that was specifically girls only. Elementary mathematics for girls. And it's quite interesting because it was actually an effort to bring maths to girls, where before there was no obligation to do any maths whatsoever. And there was what we might call now a pipeline problem, where if no one's taking maths, there's no one to teach maths. And this would just perpetuate the issue. So yeah, Elementary Girls for Maths was kind of a big introduction in 1930 to try to offer maths to both girls and boys.
And Hazel, what's really interesting there is the numbers of boys taking the Leaving Cert. That's quite a small number as well, that it shows that not everyone went on and took the Leaving Cert, that we really are talking about much smaller numbers than in the present day.
Yeah, exactly. So, and this is something we kind of need to consider when we're looking back at like the content that was assessed. In the past, it was more so the privilege to do the Leaving Cert. You obviously didn't need to take a job, and if you were going to, like, you weren't obliged to work. If you were able to take the time to take the Leaving Cert, you needed to show certain academic prowess in order to be able to take the Leaving Cert, whereas now we have a near 100% rate of students taking the Leaving Cert. So it was a very different demographic of students that took the Leaving Cert in the past.
And Hazel, this is maybe an unfair question, but when you look at some of those early exam papers in, say, something like maths, are you surprised that, was it easy? Was it easier? Or were they still interesting questions posed and challenging questions posed?
Yeah, so this is actually the specific question we originally set out to try and answer. We were involved in like a social media debate about, oh, the Leaving Cert was harder when I was younger, now it's so easy, and things like that. So we tried to look at, over the last 100 years, whether it has become more rote learning, less rote learning, is it more creative thinking, what's the level of complexity in the maths. And one thing that really came forward quite strongly is we looked back originally at like very early maths exam papers from like 1925, 26, and we looked at the questions and we went, wow, these are really complicated. Like you would be in like undergraduate maths level in university in order to be able to answer these. And they'd be like a 3-page proof and like quite involved. And then we went and looked at the textbook and it was 5 lines, word for word, exactly what they wanted you to write as the answer. So, yeah, the questions might have been more high level or like at least appearing more complex and maybe more mathematically rigorous in terms of prove this and show this and do this proof by parts. But actually, it turned out that a lot of the questions were just rote learning and regurgitation by the students, even back then.
So actually, you probably didn't need to be that good at maths at all. If you just were good at memorising things, you could memorise the whole thing and you didn't really need to know how to apply it or what to do with it. You just needed to know what to write down.
Yeah, I guess it's quite nuanced, like as in we aren't definitively saying, we're just that it was different, I think, is the biggest thing that comes from this. Now the focus is on the applications. Are you able to look at a word-based problem and figure out what maths needs to be done in order to solve it? But also very much today in the maths exams, you're kind of given a part A, which leads you to a part B, to lead you, you're kind of being brought through it. Whereas before, you'd just be asked, solve this equation. Very much, this is the thing we want you to solve, go and solve it. Now it's more so you've got a problem in the real world that you're trying to figure out, and there's kind of a process for going through it, and you're led through it with the questions. So it is different, and it depends on exactly what you want to assess, which one you're going to ask.
And Colm, looking at those figures of the numbers of boys and girls taking maths, it really does bring home the fact that not everyone went through from the intermediate cycle to the senior cycle. And when does that change? Is it with the introduction of free secondary school education in the late 1960s with Donogh O'Malley and so on? Is there a point in history when we can say the Leaving Cert becomes the exam that so many take in the country?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, if you go back to right before that, the Investment in Education report in 1965, well, it was published in 1965, started in 1962, where they did kind of a stock take of the education system in Ireland. They looked at the amount of pupils who were completing primary school, around 55,000. Of that, you had over a third would have left education straight off the bat, because compulsory education was only required up until, I think it was 14 in the early 60s, that was raised to 15, and then nowadays it's up to 16. But so of those who went to secondary school, so that's about 37,500, you have another 13,500 of them who don't sit the inter-cert even. Of the 10,000 who complete the Leaving Cert, only about a fifth of them go on to university. So less than 4% of the school-going population were completing the entire say, secondary school system. And that, you see a dramatic change in that, especially from the start of the 1970s. So once free education was announced, supposed to come in 1967, all of a sudden, this idea that the Leaving Cert was the primary exclusive place for, say, the well-to-do, and that changes. With that, you also have a change in demographic of who is completing the exams, which results then in, I suppose, an alteration of how subjects will engage with that. It wasn't going to be as viewed as this kind of very strict grammar type system that had been beforehand. You have ministers around this time saying that if we invest in education, or if we view it purely from that secondary grammar type, then it's going to be a waste of money. And that idea of this, I suppose, link between the economy and the education, that kind of stems from that late 60s point, this idea of human capital, that a nation's wealth is its people. We need to invest in the children, then they'll go on through and get more high-paying jobs.
And Colm, what was the point of it? Because today there's all these different elements to it. It's a qualification that people will be able to assess if they're looking at who to hire. If there's 20,000 students who want to study law or medicine. medicine or history or whatever. It's a way of separating and distinguishing them. But given that the numbers were a lot smaller and college places were a lot smaller, but there were fewer applying and it wasn't as difficult to get into if you had the money to go, what really was the function of the Leaving Cert then? Was it a mark of achievement, or was it this state formation idea? What was the purpose really behind it?
There's a few things going on there. One, considering the fact that second level education was fee paying, but there is this idea of cultural capital that it's, you know, you're paying to go into this type of school to meet certain types of people within your social group. That then gets transferred onto the universities. So those the small numbers who go into the universities, and that's their specific way. You see it to a certain extent still in some of the private schools in Ireland, still that it's a very identity type of thing, that you're interacting with your fellow type of person. There's also the idea that there was a closer linking done between the Leaving Cert and the matriculation exam in the 1940s. This idea that, so there used to be two separate exams. Now it's you do the Leaving Cert and there's specific things that you have to pass that it's considered the same. But it was viewed as a marker for certain jobs. So if you had your Leaving Cert in the 1940s, that would be, I suppose, rule of thumb, kind of like having a university degree if you were applying for certain types of jobs, that it was seen as that's a mark of someone who's kind of gone on and is educated. There's also this idea that, yeah, so you have status, you have this idea of a marker for employment, and then there is this just inbuilt, I suppose, popular belief in Ireland of the value of education. And I think it's important that we don't forget that either. The Irish, for centuries, have valued education. Going back, if you go back even to the times of the hedge schools and stuff, when people were doing it illegally, you have this idea of people willing to, parents put themselves into penury so that their children could have a better chance of improving. So there is also that innate sense, I think, in the Irish people of an appreciation for what education can do in terms of allowing you to progress in life.
Okay, well, tonight we are talking about the history of the Leaving Cert. It is the centenary of the introduction of that senior cycle in 1924. And tonight we are debating its impact on the Irish educational system. We'll take a quick break now. When we come back, we'll be exploring how the teaching of various subjects, like, for example, history, has evolved over the past 100 years. So stay with us here on News Talk. Welcome back. We're talking history, and tonight we are talking about the history of the Leaving Certificate. The exams have started. I think it's the history exam this Wednesday, and there are so many students caught up in everything that goes with it. But there is more to life than the Leaving Certificate. We don't want to add to the pressure. We are going to take a look back at 100 years ago when it was introduced and how it has evolved over that century. My panel of experts, they are quite brilliant. Dr. Orla McCormick, Associate Professor in the School of Education at the University of Limerick and an expert on curriculum policy and reform. Deirdre McMahona, past president and now public relations officer for the History Teachers Association of Ireland, and she lectures in history pedagogy in Trinity College Dublin. Dr. Hazel Murray, who lectures in cybersecurity at Munster Technological University, and Dr. Colm McGarrett, a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Galway. And Orla, maybe let's talk about curriculum and curriculum change and evolution over the past 100 years. You definitely see quite significant changes and movements over that time.
Yeah, and I suppose between 1922 and 1967, there weren't that many curriculum changes. It kind of, I suppose, proceeded largely as before, bar initially with the focus on Irish and Irish history, as previously mentioned. I think the main changes we've probably seen, if we look at the Leaving Certificate, like in the 1990s, we saw, I suppose, introduction of new Leaving Cert programmes. So we have the Leaving Certificate Applied introduced, we have the Leaving Certificate Vocational Programme introduced. We also have, I suppose, new subjects more recently introduced, you know, computer science, politics and society, for example. So all reflective of the evolving society in Ireland and the needs of the students. I suppose in terms of the Leaving Certificate exam, one of the main changes we've seen is that the majority of subjects now have a second assessment component. oftentimes up to about 40%. And the evidence by the NCCA would show that students and their parents tend to really like that. It tends to assess learning, different forms of learning. You know, so it could be a project, for example, in history. And it also can take some of the pressure and the stress off students. At one level, though, I'd probably be a bit cynical and say that, and question, I suppose, how much has changed, acknowledging those second assessment components. But yet, I do still think a lot of the focus can be on teaching for that exam, getting students through that exam. And as Hazel mentioned earlier, to a certain extent, learning off answers to repeat them back in the exam in June.
And Orla, a student in Northern Ireland sitting the A-levels, there most of them take three subjects for the A-levels. A small number take four. It's the same in England, Scotland and Wales. And it does make it more difficult for those students to get into Irish universities if they're only taking three because of the way it's all calculated. But our students, you know, usually take six, and six is what's used for the calculation then. Was there ever any discussion about why we take so many and why they take so few?
Not that I'm aware of, Patrick, and maybe some of the other panel members have more awareness of that. I think, I'm pretty sure when the Leaving Certificate was introduced, it was five subjects. So we've actually increased it.
Yeah, Cullum, I think it probably is advantageous to have those extra ones. I sometimes think with the A-levels, it's great to see such intense detail that they go into. It's something like English or history and so on. But it does have that downside that in that senior cycle, they are just focusing on a very small number of areas.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, if you look at the idea of we're going to do the philosophy of education here as well, this idea of a holistic viewing, learning about different types of things. There is a danger, especially at that, I suppose, critical point of development, of psychological development in children, to be focusing so intensely on one or two subjects. Because you don't, well, I've found that you don't really know what you like fully. I mean, one of my favourite subjects in secondary school was chemistry. I'm not a chemist now, and you know, I still don't know, I do all right with it, but I think it also helped me in terms of my own thinking, in like there's different ways of viewing it. So sometimes the subject isn't the only thing that's being taught. You could do maths in school to learn that you can approach problems in a different way, or it's a different type of thinking. So I'd also be a little bit wary of over-specialisation too young.
And what about history then specifically? Because you did your PhD on that. How has the teaching of history changed over the years?
You look at it, the idea of history, obviously it was set as one of the central subjects for this new policy of Gaelicisation that was introduced in the 1920s. But there's also, I suppose, to link it back to what we've been talking about for the last while, this idea of the exams. In the 1940s, for example, the inspectorate who were in charge of setting the curriculum and examining it, they said that there was few subjects that were as interesting for both students and teachers as history when taught correctly. Whatever correctly means, but they also acknowledged that teachers found it exceptionally hard to teach in the ways that they would like, whilst also being, I suppose, focusing on this exam system. And it's this idea of, you get this repeatedly, that difficulty, or I suppose, a tension between curriculum versus exam, as in what we'd like to teach, and then that backwash effect of the exam on how and so what has people been learned. I saw a great quote from the 1987 by John Fiennes. He was an educationist in England, and he was talking about this idea of trying to teach the breadth of English history. Likewise, if you look at the early syllabi for history in Irish history in secondary schools, it was simply study the general outline of Irish history from mythology up until modern times. That was the intercert. The leaving cert then was another line, just says the leaving certificate syllabus would be a more detailed study of the intercert.
And would there have been an anti-English dimension to the way it was taught, or was that, you know, a subtext, or was it part of the actual text?
Yeah, I think that's something that we've overblown with our thinking. That I'm not speaking on specific teachers in their classrooms, but in terms of the overall system, if you look at the syllabus that was being set, you look at the major textbooks and look at the exam questions. I did as part of the PhD, I looked at every single exam question that was asked in inter and leaving cert Irish history from 1926 to 68. And I find that what they're promoting, it's not necessarily this kind of black and white, you know, good Irishman, bad Englishman type of thing. It's that they're the people who they choose to celebrate were generally those who promoted, they were kind of the great men of Irish history, but the great men of Gaelic history. That was kind of the idea. So you could have, and it also wasn't a Catholic-Protestant divide either. You had a celebration of the likes of Gladstone, for example, in the 19th century, but that's because he was linked then with, you know, reforms for which helped kind of the nationalist cause. Likewise, you could have some nasty Irish people who would have been fighting against what was kind of the narrative that was being promoted, i.e., and it's not necessarily independent Ireland either. It's just promotion of Gaelic Ireland as a thing.
That's interesting, because we did a show on Gladstone last December, and that was one of the things throughout the 20th century. There were so many Irish politicians and people who had such a positive view of Gladstone, and we were kind of curious about where that had come from. But this is clearly where a large part of it is coming from, the way Gladstone was being taught in the schools.
Yes, but that's what we see in, say, some of the textbooks and the syllabus. But then the very practical nature of what's happening in schools has to be considered as well. This idea of you have so much to teach, not enough time to do it. And the quote I was going to say about Fiennes there, he says that this idea to try and cover everything it turned history into a race which nobody could ever win, with the teacher getting faster and faster the nearer the exams they get, leaving out greater and greater chunks of reality in the hopes of making it to the winning post. And he continued then, said that painted history not as it is, confused and confusing, bedraggled and messy. Instead, it sorts it into one almighty washing line that is a neat and linear story. And to me, that's something that I kind of struggle with my own research. What I'm thinking about is that there's one thing in terms of what is being said in the syllabus is like, this is what all the children are learning. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe there's huge, and it's not until you kind of get into correcting exams, maybe, that you can get a deeper insight into that.
And Deirdre, you did brilliant work, and the History Teachers Association of Ireland did brilliant work in making sure that the history and the history curriculum did present that, you know, bedraggled, confused, you know, complicated take on the past, and not some simplistic version and vision. And the association did brilliant work in making sure that history wasn't downgraded in the new junior cycle, which would have had a huge impact on the senior cycle then as well. And it is an important way that the teaching of history and the way history is assessed has become part of that curriculum.
Absolutely. I mean, and just to kind of remind people to put things into context, that, you know, the framework document was published back in 2011, 2012, which yet again was looking at reforming the educational system, but in this case, in particular, the junior cycle. And like any reforms, obviously there was going to be resistance to certain things, but this is where I think it did capture the national imagination, believe it or not. And you know, we're talking about, you know, the Irish people have always, as Colman said, engaged in the educational process, going right back. And this particular campaign really did, I think, highlight how engaged the Irish people were, and particularly in their history. There are multifaceted skills that the student of history, you know, even at junior level, is going to be exposed to and is going to be able to learn. And this is all set down, you know, in terms of, you know, the vision and the learning outcomes in the junior cycle. I mean, if you look, for instance, at, you know, what kind of things are you studying? Well, yes, you're studying kind of the broad sweep of general themes and, in a sense, the great narratives, if you like, of the past. But what you're now being taught in the classroom is the vocabulary of history. And I think this is one thing maybe that has been a great change in the way history is taught. You know, words like investigate, evaluate, consider, assess, identify, you're no longer just being asked to give us five facts on a particular, you know, sequence of events of a particular historical period. Students at junior level are, you know, analysing documents. They're literally asked questions to form, to form a value judgment, but based on being very well taught by their history teachers on how to actually investigate and evaluate sources. So we've come an awful long way in not only in the course itself and the actual subject matter that they're being taught, but in the methodologies. So it is a great time to be a history teacher. And I think one particular group of people that we should look at and salute, dare I say it, are looking at when Irish Historical Studies came out in 1938. And the preface to Irish Historical Studies by Moody and Edwards, you know, was very, very clear. And what they wanted to do was, you know, in confronting issues of the writing of history, engaging with history and identity, that this, of course, had always been problematic for historians. But now they wanted to look at new methods in research and analysis, in looking at language and rhetoric, etc., on the writing of history. So this new departure in historiography, if you like, or the new scientific method, as it was called, did want to move away from sentiment, if you like, and bias to, I suppose, maybe just set down much more clearly and reevaluate and reinterpret the study of history. So, and I think it's worth quoting the following, what they actually say, which I think echoes to today in their preface. They said that they emphasise, and I quote, the importance of the cooperation between the historian and the teacher, and that they hope to be of service to the specialist, the teacher, and the general reader. So here is now history becoming and being part of a national conversation as well as an educational tool.
Hazel, we also see great evolution in the way other STEM subjects have been taught and how the curriculum has evolved over the years. For example, I'm thinking of biology, which, you know, didn't really exist in certainly in the current form before 1971.
Yeah, so biology wasn't actually considered to be a subject until, 1971. It was two courses, botany and physiology and hygiene. And if you kind of think about what we think of in biology today, that it's not just those two subjects, it's so much more. And I guess as subjects evolve, the Leaving Cert subjects, like as topics evolve and as we use more topics in our everyday lives, they'll also come into the Leaving Cert as well. So, I mean, we saw the introduction of computer science as well recently. From a maths perspective as well, like I know originally the only maths exams really were arithmetic and geometry. And arithmetic was literally just being given a table of shillings and pence and needing to add them all up. And that was your maths exam. So it really has quite come very far in the last 100 years in terms of what we want students to know, the kind of holistic understanding of a topic rather than maybe this kind of predefined smaller subject areas. And as well in maths, just on the mention of syllabus changes over the years, there's actually been 8 syllabus changes in maths in the last 100 years. And every single one of them was in order to increase the problem solving and creative reasoning abilities of students and prioritise that in the exams. So every time a syllabus is changed, that's the motivation for it. And I think we're slowly seeing it going in the right direction of problem solving and creative reasoning over rote learning.
And what about a subject like home economics? Because I think there was always a certain prejudice against that, or that was going to be easy. But actually, when you look at the curriculum, there is very important stuff there, very useful stuff. And in some ways, you almost think it's the type of thing that everyone should be studying.
Yeah, exactly. That seems like a branding issue, to be honest. Like if you just renamed it something slightly differently, maybe it wouldn't have this kind of perception of, oh, it's the study. Sometimes it was considered the subject you take if you don't take science. But there's so much science in home economics as well, and the ability to follow steps, follow procedures, practical skills. You kind of need like a full suite of abilities and skills in order to take the subject, whereas maybe that's not how it's perceived.
Well, tonight we are talking about the history of the Leaving Certificate, 100 years old this year. When we come back, we'll be finding out, should we celebrate this centenary, and has the examination and that senior cycle served Ireland well? So stay with us here on News Talk. Welcome back. We're talking history, and we are talking about the history of the Leaving Certificate. I'm rejoined by Dr. Orla McCormick of the University of Limerick, Deirdre McMahona of Trinity College Dublin and the History Teachers Association of Ireland, Dr. Hazel Murray of Munster Technological University, and Dr. Cullen McGarald of the University of Galway. Orla, maybe I might pose that question to you about 100 years on, is this something that we should celebrate? Has the Leaving Certificate served Ireland well?
Yeah, and I think I've feel I've been quite cynical so far. So I think, yes, it's always good to celebrate things like this. I think for me, I'd probably look at the purpose. What is the purpose of the Leaving Certificate? And I think it's fair to say that the purpose has changed within the 100 years. We spoke earlier about the low participation rates at the start, the couple of hundred students that progressed onto it, and the fact that ultimately the Leaving Certificate 100 years ago, even 50, 60 years ago, was ultimately a stepping stone into a good job. Nowadays, I think it's fair to say that purpose has changed. I think pretty much 90% progress on now to some form of further education. So for me, I now see the Leaving Certificate as a stepping stone onto that further education, whatever that might be. And I think, you know, we can look then and say, well, at the moment, does the Leaving Certificate support that? And there is, unfortunate to say, that there is research evidence that shows that students don't always feel prepared from the Leaving Certificate for that step on to further ed. They feel like they're not in a position to work independently and to manage their own learning. So I would think, I would like, as maybe as part of the 100-year celebration, that we think about that purpose. What is it that we need? And what is it, more importantly, that the students that are in senior cycle and doing the Leaving Certificate, what is it that they need from it?
And Orla, if there was one thing that you could change about it, what would you change?
I actually would look at changing the CAO. And I know I'm merging the two and I'm linking the two, but I do think that the CAO has a huge impact on students' experiences of the Leaving Certificate. So I think if we could look at ways of broadening that out, having a more inclusive and a more holistic, to use the language we used earlier, to have a more holistic analysis of students' learning as part of the CAO process, I think it could have a positive backwash effect on the Leaving Certificate.
Hazel, I'm interested in your perspective as well, because you taught maths in a secondary school. You've also done this brilliant work on examining the STEM exam papers over that past 100 years. And I'm interested in your perspective on 100 years on. Should we be celebrating it? Has it served Ireland well? Have the reforms gone far enough?
Yes. What is the purpose of the exams? Is it to prepare you for the workforce? Is it to get you into college? Is it to give you a broad understanding of lots of different subjects, or to allow you to specialise? And for me, a lot of it has to do with equity. There's huge value in our Leaving Cert system in that we try to reduce the amount of bias. So when you take the Leaving Cert, the marking is done blind. Someone doesn't know who you are, what your background is. But also the caveat to that is that someone doesn't know what you are, what your background is as well. So someone that can afford to get grinds and extra help and additional supports, and someone that needs it or doesn't need it, and different learning abilities. I think for me, it's kind of looking at what we want the Leaving Cert to achieve and how we can support as many people as possible to get there. Because often we think of academia as being the next step. And I believe there's a change towards more apprenticeships, practical skills, and the importance of those both to our society and both and to the diversity of individuals that will leave secondary school and will need and want to go in different directions. So, yeah, I don't have one specific answer, but just looking at what we hope to achieve, and are we making it as equitable as possible for everyone to take it and have a good experience of it as well.
Cullum, you're the historian. Mm-hmm. When we talk about centenaries and bicentenaries, we always debate how they should be remembered and commemorated, or whether they should even be remembered at all. In terms of this anniversary, it's a significant one in terms of our educational history. Is it a good one that should be celebrated?
I think it's important to, I suppose, to acknowledge that this new system that's effectively been in place for the last 100 years. Now, whether it is entirely suitable for what we're looking for, Orla was there talking a moment ago about that idea of, you know, the CAO and the holistic thing. These aren't new questions either. And you do see in the 1920s, when the system was only founded, that people were asking, is this really what, do we have the right system? Are we doing the right thing? You have, with the Leaving Cert exam, you have people say, Owen McNeill said that it was a crazy system at all times. That was a direct quote about trying to bring all students of all different, so it was different class, different standards, different interests into one competition annually. Likewise, you had the head of the Irish Schoolmasters Association said something pretty similar. He said it was prima facie absurd for an entirely external body to have the sole right of determining the success or failure of a pupil's secondary course without any weight being attached to the judgment of those who have educated him. So that's this whole debate of whether teachers should have a role in examining their own students or have an input into that. The fact that we're still debating things like these, to me, is what's fascinating about it. And that's, I suppose, this idea of whether we should commemorate it. Yes, because it allows us the opportunity to, I suppose, investigate the system that is whilst also placing it into its historical context. And, you know, it's not going to be the exact same system, you know that as an historian. But that doesn't mean you can't learn from the past and that it doesn't, I suppose, bring these questions to light. And it's the reason why we're here talking about this today. So I think we should commemorate it.
And Deirdre, you've also experience of the classroom and now experience in Trinity teaching those educators who will be going into the classrooms. And from the perspective of both being in the classroom and working with the educators and campaigning for curriculum reform and protecting and preserving the role of history, what's your take on where we are 100 years on?
I think we're in a very good position. Overall, obviously, there will be flaws. And I echo the reference to the Leaving Certificate and it being so joined with the CAO. I would hope in the future that there would be more of a concentration on the value of the Leaving Certificate in its own right, you know, as a sense of, you know, of achievement for the students. But in terms of, you know, here we are, you know, 100 years later, and I do think that we're in a good place in terms of particularly the teaching of history. But in general, just the value of our educational system and the fact that part of the narrative and part of the kind of national discourse in what our educational system is for, and what is it we are trying to do. I think that what we're doing, you know, has a huge social value as well as educational value. And what we're doing in this day where, you know, there's so much kind of political and ideological debate going on, they're invaded by TV, social media, smartphones or whatever, that at least by the time they've done their Leaving Certificate, that they will be equipped to be able to discriminate between bias and propaganda.
Well, our best wishes, the best of luck to everyone who is sitting the Leaving Certificate this summer. It is important, but it is not the only thing that matters. It is definitely not everything, and there are always great things ahead of you no matter what happens. So just give it your best, and that is all you can do. And that is the end for another week of Talking History. My thanks to my producer Marisa Sullivan, Hannah Flam on research. We've got more debate and discussion next week, so hope you can join us then. We've been Talking History. Good night.